Dad Bod Rap Pod. We just conducted a social experiment off air before we pressed record on this, and Dave and Nate, this is like one of those videos where like kids try Jamaican snacks for the first time.
I love those videos.
Yeah, so which I love too. Fuck
I don't
you,
love this song.
Yeah, BuzzFeed. We did a social experiment where Nate and Dave got to hear Old Town Road by Lil Nas X, a titan figure in the music industry, inventor of country trap. And judging by the looks on their faces.
Is country trap crap?
Is it interject with the
please
joke.
Allow me to be the first to make this joke. I don't understand why people like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't understand why people like it or why you don't like it?
No, I understand why I don't like it. I have a deep understanding of why I don't like it. I'm hearing it for the first time after it's so hyped. Like, right. if somebody had played it for me and said this is some unknown artist, I would have been like, no, that's interesting. But honestly, getting kicked off the country charts seems to be the best thing that ever happened to this. 100%.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. Masterstroke. Yeah. Masterstroke. Dave, you were nodding out. You were kind of...
I'm sweaty from dancing.
Well, you're a big Billy Ray guy.
To begin with.
Right? I was here for the guest verse. Fucking horrendous. Next. Jesus. I can see why people fuck with it, because, I mean, people fucking suck, right? I mean, real talk. Damone, you seem to be back in it. Is that the vibe I'm
are
getting?
Are we hurting your achy breaky heart, or what's up?
I think Billy Ray redeemed all of his daughter's misgivings against the culture. No, look. I'm going to tell you like this. It hits me on a couple levels. And number one, this is like high concept to me. So part of me is like, there's been a lot of rap parodies, right? Like the On the Boat, I'm on a boat guy won a Grammy or some
the
shit.
Lonely Island.
The Lonely Island?
Yeah.
The Saturday Night Live guy?
Yeah. Did? That's, okay. It's not a guy, it's a group.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's Andy Samberg is right. Probably the guy you're right, thinking right, of. Right. And then he has two of his buddies that he grew up
sure,
with.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And they did this parody rap, of which there's many. And it was like, oh, this is cute. This is cool.
Right, right.
Like it was heralded as being something funny. And they did. They won, I want to say.
I think they did win a Grammy.
They did win a Grammy behind
and they
it.
Have a song with E-40 that's produced by J-Zone.
Wow. That is
that's
nuts.
Wild.
That okay. is wild.
And I also read J-Zone's book while I was on vacation.
Oh, nice. I have my copy for you, by the way.
Brimming with facts.
Nice. Always. Facts at the ready. So I have this kind of bitterness about rap parody, period. There's a lot of acoustic.
100%.
White right. people doing acoustic.
That's the worst music in the history of the world. Totally. As personified by the character Marnie on Girls.
Okay.
She kind of does that,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
She,
yep. like, Atlanta terrible. Did a great send-up yep. of that yes. last season as well. And so part of me is this shit is fucking catharsis for me. I love that that for whatever, and we can argue about what is and isn't country music. Actually, let's not argue about that. we can talk about what is and isn't country music, but in effect, this kid has kind of trolled a whole genre by saying, let me take, you know, the most characterized parts of your culture, put it to a trap beat and see how you like it.
I wonder if I would have liked it more if there was no Billy Ray, and especially because Billy Ray is the first thing you hear. And right. I had heard so much about this. We talked about this on the last episode, but I was in Europe when this kind of kicked off, and I purposefully chose not to participate in this phenomenon, and now I have. And I could just go back.
You
I
can't
just,
go back
I
now.
I could just get a bottle of wine.
Totally.
And
this is the red
the lake
pill.
And yeah. Now I know what everyone's talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have bitten from the tree on the Old Town Road.
I will say he's handling fame well. He's like being like fun, kind of playful and jocular on Twitter. And
oh,
like
that's cool.
Really like seizing his moment
well,
in a fun, interesting way.
He
surpassed Drake, right?
Was yeah. The most thing? Streams ever in
Jesus.
A week.
Jesus.
So,
and by 26 million, it was like no, not even close.
Wow.
He's hacked into something. And so I like it as a pop culture hack. Okay. You know what I mean? It
does sound hacky.
He thanks.
Do you like the song? Do you like the track?
Are you bumping this?
I'm not gonna bump it, but the idea is fucking genius. I'm sorry, the idea is genius.
Isn't
like that nobody
as sort of shallow and cliche as the
absolutely
as the novelty rap songs where we're dissing.
Absolutely, but it's the reversal of the power dynamic, and him getting off the country charts was just a perfect example. They rejected it in such a way that we've been wanting to reject fake shit that comes into the rap zone, and we just have to take
Lil Dicky.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So anybody can walk through rap. Any white person that wants to do something cute can come through rap and do whatever the fuck they want.
Got it. Okay.
And we are told, lighten up, you know, this is for everybody, blah, 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 blah. And now this song.
Azalea.
Yep. Igloo Australia. So now that the cowboy boot is on the other foot,
zing!
Wow,
be here all week.
He just tipped his cap. You guys couldn't see it.
Yeah, Wrangler on my booty as well. I love that. Number two, it was there the whole time. This very simple, put a trap beat behind something lightweight, twangy, was there the whole time,
it's
and somehow nobody did it.
But there was a country rapper when I worked at a record store in a former life called Cowboy Troy, who they were really pushing.
You really can't see my
There's
eyes
a lot
right
of
now.
That. I mean, we were sort of talking about it, you know, off air, but, you know, Rapping Duke, Dahar Dahar,
Sadat X, Wild West,
Wild Cowboys.
Regulators.
Oh, Wild Cowboys. That's what it was.
Now, so the country aesthetic has been circling around hip hop for a while. Even Nelly. Country Grammar, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was there the whole Bubba Sparks. It was there the whole time. This kid, in a sense, if you wanted to say, how do you marry those two things? He nailed it. He may never, ever do it again, and that's fine. Also, Taylor Swift will be doing this shit for the next 5 years, and that's also fine.
She hasn't really been country for quite a while,
she about to be.
Right.
She heard this shit and was like, yo.
I don't know if you guys followed this little saga at all, but, like, so Miley went hip-hop with Mike Will Made It and did, like, whatever her We Can't Stop or whatever, and her the Jordans song where, you guys should see Damone's face. That's hilarious. It physically hurt him when I mentioned that. And then she kind of like got in trouble for twerking and doing drugs and being naked or whatever and disavowed
the culture.
And then made a one bad album. No one liked it. And now she's back.
Yeah.
Because that's what hip hop is. It's like it's a funny hat for you to put on.
Right.
It's not a culture.
Right.
And so in a sense, Lil Nas X is putting on country music, which was black music in the beginning. But do your homework.
Charlie Pride, Ray Charles, these kind of things.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All
right. And, you know, the banjo is an African instrument, but whatever. So he's taking it and it's reversing that dynamic. He put together two pop culture things in such a way. And he's like a meme kid. So he was promoting
country
the shit
is the other
meme.
Kind of thing that sells. You
For
know
sure.
what I mean?
Right.
It's like
right.
rap still sells to a certain extent, though it's mostly a streaming phenomenon. But country still sells.
It's,
people show up.
There
it's
are
the
CDs
heart.
In Walmart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's the heart of like pure Americana, like white bread, mayonnaise music. And this dude just barely put a trap beat under it, did something super simple, and like cracked the whole code on this shit. Is he an amazing artist? I can't say that. I know like one cute thing that he's done. I admire the execution on this, and he's been handling it very well in the Twitter space. And
I'll just say this: I'm shocked you like it,
right?
And if we're taking one hit wonders, I'll take the bitch I'm a cow all day every day.
Well, it's from but it's meme music. It's from the same vibe, and I love that record too.
Yeah,
I loved it. I thought the video and all that. Not that
I know
it's,
you like the video.
Yeah, I was so ready to give Doja Cat another chance. But it's this understanding of pop culture and just hacking it and just being like, okay, these are things that get attention. They're sticky. There's something about me. I hate pop records and I love pop records.
Sure.
Yeah. I love a good pop. I mean, I hate it, but I love it. And ask me how I feel about this song in a month. It'll probably be different, but
right. I hear you.
But the fact
it's at the height of its thing right now.
He's called Lil Nas X, which again, he needs to be on the Country Music Awards as Lil Nas X. My people have come so far. Tiger Woods, y'all.
Tiger Woods, y'all. No. Oh, yeah, fascinating. Yeah, this is a bit of a segue, but hey, it's our show. We can do what we want. Did any of you listen to any of the Billie Eilish record?
Yeah, yeah. What did Roxanne Shansay say? I didn't listen to it. I was subjected to it.
That's funny. Kids. I think it's really interesting.
Do you guys like
I think
it?
I think that's the best pop music right now, for sure. Yeah, okay. I think it's fascinating.
Okay.
I'm not, like, bumping it, but I did listen to it through once and then went back and explored a couple of songs in a bit more depth.
Okay.
It's very weird.
Weird's good.
But I don't know if it's weird in like a, I just discovered if you put on black nail polish, the kids at school will make fun of you kind of weird way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't, now, is she an industry plant? Wrong show.
Oh, for
this
sure.
This was last week.
For sure.
But yeah.
all day.
I should have brought her up.
I'm like, cool. Billy Idol? What are we talking
Billy
about?
Billy Idol.
Yeah. it's kind of like to me, it's like if Future were like a 19-year-old white woman. And like,
but she brings like Denzel Curry on tour. Like,
mm-hmm.
she knows she's paying like her little dues to hip hop
She's been very upfront about.
She's inspired
homage.
By Odd Future,
yeah.
and like that's
yeah.
where
she's,
like
she's
ha- the kind of career she wants to have. I think she's really interesting.
Okay, yeah.
I'll yeah. listen
okay.
to more.
I'll take a weird pop record for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
It's not that dissimilar to like Annika.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like mm-hmm. that artist on Stone's Throw or a couple of other different things where it's like really dark, but it's definitely still pop. Like,
yeah,
they're well written, well constructed songs.
Breathy pop.
OK.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I like this way more than Lord, which like the whole world flipped out over
right,
Lord and I didn't get it. Like I Royals. I'm like, oh.
A trappy Fiona Apple.
New Zealish snap music. I get it. but everyone freaked out. I was like, okay, you guys are taking this too far. Does she have any other good songs? And then they're like, no, not really. But so, I would say on the Billie Eilish, there's three or four songs that are really interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to counsel my kids on why we don't listen to songs called Zanny.
that song's tight, dude.
But it's
I would listen to that 100 times more than Lil Nas X,
but
which
I
will
I
be
like,
my last
but,
time.
But I like that you got in the pool, though. I appreciate that.
Oh man,
the cesspool of pop. All
right,
culture.
Let's talk about Big Nas.
Big Nas, this is the wildest kind of postmodern intro. As my phone goes off, this is the wildest postmodern intro of all time because we're actually today talking about one of the greatest hip hop records of all time that gets very much overused all the time by everyone, but. In this particular case, it is absolutely true.
It might literally be the best one.
Right.
You can make a very strong argument. That's not even a hot take. Mm-hmm. And it's turning 25 as of this week, and we are, of course, talking about Illmatic.
Of course. This Friday it turns 25, I believe.
This Friday turns 25. So we are going to dissect it in the way that only we can. You may have heard about us on AV Club for our ability to break down classic hip-hop records. So we're going to do a deep dive on Illmatic on the other side of the break, Dead by Rap Pod. In my mind right now, I don't know, maybe you can do this in post, Nate. I just hear New York State of Mind start up. Boom, 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 boom. The motherfucking Dungeons of Rap. This is the Dad Bod Rap Pod. We are talking about arguably the greatest rap album ever made, Illmatic. Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming all of you have heard Illmatic, so we don't have to do a lot of picture painting here. But let's talk about why. Mm-hmm. So in contemporary times, albums are short.
Yeah.
This album is short.
Right.
Straight up Murderer's Row of all the best producers. And besides Premier, I think they're all literally from Queens, as is Nas.
Yeah.
So you have this kind of like great sonic palette that works together and like they're sampling the illest stuff and they're just like very concise chops and it like has this dripping atmosphere.
Right.
And he was a new voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think part of the reason is, and there's a one track, and I'll see if you guys think this too, that arguably could have been left off. But basically, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And I think most people think One Time for Your Mind is kind of the not great song. No?
I like that one too.
I do too. I love it all. I love it.
I love that. I love that. But I feel like it's why part of the reason and kind of what you're getting at. Why it's so great is there is no extra. There is no fat to it.
Totally.
The artwork was incredible.
Right.
That has been copied
in so many times.
Like a meme before memes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So many times.
Yeah. So there's just so many like iconic aspects to it. There were so many things that Nas and the team got right. Now we, you know, for those of us who were old enough to remember, when this came out, he was still basking in the glory of Live at the Barbecue.
Right.
Like when he came out
right.
and he was this like lightning bolt, new voice. And then Halftime was on the Zebrahead soundtrack. Mm. And so there was this, at that time, there was this kind of like progressive hype. Like,
right.
Oh my God, right. this dude Nas. He's the heir to Rakim. He's the next.
Mm-hmm. Nasty Nas.
Nasty Nas right. at that point. Right. And so there was this kind of like growing legend around him before the album dropped. And then I think it had to be because of magazines. There was this like, oh, he got Q-Tip to produce part of the record. Mm-hmm. Oh, he got Premier.
Right, right.
So the legend of it and the hype, I would say, was only eclipsed by Snoop's first album in terms of pre-internet hype.
That was crazy because like Snoop's Live at the Barbecue is...
Deep Cover.
Deep Cover. Thank
right.
you.
Yeah, right.
And then his... Zebrahead soundtrack is one of the greatest albums of all time.
Right.
The Chronic, right. which, the Chronic. And he's like on so much of it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So, it's a little crazy. Like Snoop, like feels like he came out fully formed. Nas gave you like little peaks.
You were just, you were getting little glimpses, but it was enough to know that he was such a breath of fresh air. And this idea of being, which I remember being big at the time as the lyrical heir to Rakim in the sense that me and my rapper friends used to talk about. He raps in perfect concentric circles, a young Nas. So it's like rappers, I monkey kick them with the funky rhythm, I be kicking, new rhyming word, musician inflicting compositions of pain, I'm like Starface sipping cocaine, new circle, holding an M16, see with the pen, I'm extreme. And we were like, oh my. There was just, it was almost like those mandala pieces of artwork just so beautifully collaged in the
but
imagery.
It's also like a novel. It's like at the same time it's telling what that song in particular is incredible and probably one of the greatest songs ever written in any genre. New York State of Mind, for those of you who don't memorize Nas lyrics, but you should. the way that kicks in, so they start with the Wild Style skit, right? Yes. The Genesis. Yeah. It's got the train sounds and that just like puts you in
now
the
you world in New York.
Pre-gentrification New York.
Yep.
And then when that piano drops, it's just like you're entering this world and he tells this brilliant narrative and you're just like captivated.
Right. You're on the rooftop. Whenever I hear that, I'm like, I'm about to jump off of a rooftop right now.
Right.
And it's so kind of encapsulated a vibe and a feeling and a time to the point where you could make an argument that Nas spent years trying to live that down. Like
he still is.
You think so?
Right.
Absolutely. He's haunted. His career is haunted by how
greatness.
Good Illmatic
is. Yeah, I mean, that's his Citizen Kane, right?
Exactly. You that's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
There's this weird, like, kind of contrarian faction of rap Twitter that will go in on the written is better than Illmatic. I just can't even entertain that
for a
moment.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Just Dre's ad libs on Nas is coming alone. Are disqualified. Nas. Like, they're fake lighting a joint. I get it. Once you and here's what we do in hip hop. We get spoiled on classics and then we start taking classics for granted. Illmatic was a moment in time. Nas is being a new voice. I mean, I think it's brilliantly covered in the movie, the Nas documentary, which is called something.
I can't remember, but I know what you're talking about.
It's great. It's
not called Stillmatic, is it?
We're talking about the
one where it's
the
like
film.
Yeah, it's a documentary.
I think you're right.
And
it's
Time is Illmatic.
Time is Illmatic.
Yeah, it's called Time is Illmatic,
and it's a lot about his brother.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Jungle.
Yeah, and it's it just his upbringing and kind of like this whole thing, the vibe and the energy, and also the redemption of Queensbridge.
Mm-hmm.
So he had so much on his shoulders. Like coming into
this,
not only was he breaking through as an artist, but if you watch the movie, they kind of explain it. They're still coming off of being crushed by KRS-One on the bridges over.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole neighborhood is like reeling It's kind of like when we watch football and Seattle was just whooping the 49ers ass for like it seemed like a whole decade. Like that's how they kind of set this up. And so Nas is stepping into being kind of like this ascendant king. Totally, his whole neighborhood's on his back. His whole aesthetic is on his back. And I don't know if anybody has ever delivered
with
that kind of pressure and expectations.
Well, I mean, he had a fucking Jedi council of producers surrounding themselves, you know, surrounding themselves with him. And it's like unbelievable. Talk like, about delivering it and getting the weight that was on your shoulders.
And I think it has to be mentioned. Nas is extremely handsome and like well-dressed for the time. Like he had like the, you know, it's like he was the full package. Like,
and he was like, young. And
he was really young.
Yeah, that was the thing. I think they're talking about he's 18, 19 when he's writing.
There's a lot of things. Like when Odd Future was coming out, they're like, can you believe they're doing this when they're 18? And there's a lot like an old head kind of thing where it's like Rakim was 17 when he wrote the greatest rap songs ever made. Right. And Nas was 18 when he wrote this.
Right.
It's like rap's up until very recently a young man's game. So it's not that weird for your best shit to become
supposed
to be in high school.
Mm-hmm. It had this kind of gritty, almost like...
but it was wise, right?
That's streetwise, and, like, novelist.
Right.
Yeah. It just definitely had this, I guess, a narrative voice that we also hadn't heard before because there was kind of like... it was a reflective kind of gangster experience. Mm-hmm. Like it was definitely, you know, hyper-violent, had all the problematic...
Totally.
Edges to it, but then he also kind of has this kind of morality play that's going on throughout the album. So, it was written. I mean, come on, guys, what do we do? What do we do? No, here's what we're saying. We're saying that It Was Written was probably better than we gave it credit for at the time.
Sure,
which
that I agree with.
I totally agree with. If you're sitting here and saying it's better than Illmatic, you need to show me the 10 tracks, and it had more than 10 that eclipsed that. So hopefully. We can stop having weird contrarian debates about that. But so let's walk through it a little bit. We each kind of have some fave tracks that we're going to deep dive on. But as Nate mentions, opens up with New York State of Mind, which is just ridiculous. and then next up we have
Life's a Bitch.
And then you die. So this is, and I hate to say this if he's listening or any of his fans are listening, I think this is AZ's greatest singular moment. And I can never get into him after this.
This is AZ's Live at the Barbecue.
Right.
But then there was this level of expectation.
I like AZ probably a little bit more than you guys do. Okay. But and he's like, I don't know if he's still doing new stuff, but up until the middle of his career, he's still referencing this verse. Like it's very well constructed. It's a brilliant verse, actually.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I think it's the best thing he ever did. I don't think it's the only good thing he ever did.
Okay.
That's
okay.
My personal
opinion.
Fair enough. That's fair enough.
I like Sugar Hill.
There's some cuts on his solo album.
Yeah.
But it's
a good rapper.
Classic. It's not the classic that some people talk about. Like, AZ's.
No, yeah. I'm not there. No, I'm not
a classic.
Nah. But
good, solid album.
And it was dope because he's doing it on this very standard issue sample. This is one of the most straightforward joints on the whole album. Like, it's not a tricky chop.
Right.
It's a highly recognizable song. And his pops plays on this.
Right. Nas is dead.
Nas is dead.
Not a Mr. AZ.
Not
Mr. No, cornetist primarily, but he's playing the trumpet on this, Olu Dara.
Yeah.
Which it's hard for me to tell, and it kind of comes more
to light
than that.
It ain't hard to tell, Nate. Sorry, I had to.
Like how involved he was in Nas and Jungle's life. Like he seems to be not around.
Well,
but
if you
in
the
touch enough to like call him up for drop a feature.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Who doesn't reconcile with their estranged biological father when they get their first
become famous?
Deal? Yeah, exactly. Not Shaq.
Yeah. And then later in Nas's career, they did that Bridging the Gap single, which is more about the blues than about jazz per se.
I don't quite understand.
I had kind of stopped paying attention to Nas by that point. Like
most people did by that time.
I'm cringing. You guys can't see. I don't know.
Next track.
The next track is The World Is Yours.
Ah, isn't it? So
so good.
So Scarface, Ephemera, reverberates throughout hip-hop. It's an iconic movie. It's a bad movie if you really think about it, but
it's certainly a long movie.
It's a long movie. It's got Al Pacino being a problematic Cuban character, and I mean problematic just by his accent. But there's so connecting, calling it The World Is Yours, you know, and connecting it to that iconic scene in Scarface. Again, Nas just kind of table setting. This is a Pete Rock chop of just a whimsical sweeping piano sample that just
It's perfect, dude. Yeah. A chef kiss. The whole album. Yeah. I mean, it's the thing. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what we can say that's hasn't already been said. You know what I mean? It's just so heralded.
Yeah. It's like this song is also good.
Totally. He raps
amazing.
Well. But surely it is. I mean,
yeah. I sipped the Dom P watching Gandhi.
Oh, man.
Came on, I'm like, how do we not make this segment just us rapping all the good parts? Isn't that really good? That's totally what it is.
Yeah. Right. That's totally what we're doing.
It's brilliance, though.
I know. I could, there's not that many albums where I'm almost 40. I could recite word for word.
There was
a time where I could do Paul's Boutique pretty much word for word. Definitely the first three Tribe albums. This is one of them.
Yeah.
It's so concise and well written. Right. And it's like, but it's not so tricky you can't rap along.
Totally.
With it.
Agreed. But it's still, it still requires effort. You know what I mean? It's just perfect, dude. It rides that line. You can rap along with it. But it's a smattering of awesome lyrics and couplets and, you know what I mean? It's all over.
And I feel people are still trying to, especially as we look at this boom bap renaissance, I think, folks are definitely trying to capture that feel. Mm-hmm. Like this is, there are certain records that are just like, oh, this is a genre.
Right.
Like this is a genre defining record for East Coast rap. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the high watermark for all rap. But I mean, if you wear Tim's,
of course,
in the same way that if you hear the Chronic, from the East Coast perspective, going, right, that is there.
If you wear Dickies,
which I do on the weekends. Next track.
The next track, I feel like, Dave, this is a particular favorite of yours, Halftime.
Oh, dude, I love it. Pro. I mean, yeah, of course. I was just going to say, Large Professor on the beat. It's a song that, I'm 40 and it still gets me hype. You know what I mean? He's about to cause mass hysteria. He's in my area. You know what I mean?
Have you guys ever seen Zebrahead?
Yeah.
I have not. What is it about?
Days ago.
It's heist. It's centered in high school something. Halftime is on
Michael
the soundtrack.
Michael Rapaport being right, a white hip-hop dude?
Yeah, Rapaport.
I know he's
in it.
God damn it.
Rapaport's in it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'll have to do
it's
a read.
It's favorite.
I saw it when it came out.
It's retrospectively canceled.
Yeah. Anything involving Rapaport, we're canceling. No, I saw it when it came out because that's when you could get free movie tickets. Like if you just hung out at the record store for long enough, they'd always come by with free movie tickets to weird indie movies, and that was one of them. But Halftime being on the soundtrack was the highlight of it.
Grand
opening of that fucking movie.
This is a little bit off subject, but when I came home yesterday, my wife was watching Tapeheads with John Cusack and Tim Robbins. Have you guys seen that movie? I had not seen that movie either, and I really need to go back and watch the whole thing. It's like insane.
Okay.
It's she was like, I can't believe you didn't watch this. This seems like such a record store guy movie to watch. And I was like, maybe I didn't want to admit that I'd never seen it, or it just kind of looked bad.
Yeah.
But there's a certain kind of class of film, like the cult classic where, yeah, it's bad, but you should definitely have seen it.
This is the Cusack movie where he owns a record store?
No, that's
High Fidelity.
Oh, okay,
that's
High
Fidelity.
Okay, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, that's,
oh, that's like,
okay.
You know,
yeah,
of course I've seen that.
Yeah, okay. You're actually about to be excommunicated.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's like that's a literal record store guy movie. She means like in terms of like, you know, there's a bunch of movies, like El Topo. I would say is like that's like normal people don't watch that, but record store dudes watch that. You know what I mean? Or
normal
like, watching Ed Wood films, not the movie Ed Wood.
Right, right.
You know
right,
what I mean? It's like they're like cult classics.
Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. Right. VHS,
but from like a very like 90s like sensibility of that, like Mondo Video.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
no,
I mean?
Totally, exactly.
That makes sense. You worked in a record store. You know
I
what
did.
I'm, talking
I'm
about.
Remembering like tagging these movies in
exactly.
The VHS. Like white people watch the craziest shit.
Watching bad stuff on purpose.
$5.95. Cult classics.
Anyway, all right.
Halftime, and then
we're past halftime. It's the third quarter, and it's Memory Lane.
Oh man,
man. So it's like now he's kind of full-on story rap by the time we get to here. And it's cool because this one kind of has like a little lighter. Like, again, not only are they perfect tracks, they're also sequenced perfectly.
I know,
right?
I mean, yeah. I know, I know.
So you're coming out of halftime, which has this kind of dark, brooding, great sleigh bells.
Yeah. It's so hype, though.
Yeah,
I know.
It's
weird. I know.
It's like the cousin of Party and Bullshit. The big song, which was also originally on a soundtrack. I'm not remembering what soundtrack
Who's
it was
the man?
On, I think that you might be right.
With Ed Lover and Dr. Dre. Exactly. This is really just a movie episode, guys.
The other Dr. Dre.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's like they're both like kind of like really hype, like mood setter kind of tracks.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like before a blunt, you pull out your fronts.
I mean, speaking of the sequencing, shouts to DJ Premier, who later took credit for saying he
sequenced the track
together.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Memory.
Perfect.
It shows a master's touch. Right?
Totally. Yeah. Well, you have fucking Large Pro and Pete Rock to your right and left.
I know.
You know?
Q-Tip in the studio.
Q-Tip. Yeah. Oh,
Jesus.
Gosh. Yeah. Yeah. So but, Memory Lane definitely like, it's kind of lighter, but then the stories are kind of dark too. So it's a dope contrast.
It's emotive.
So the next song is One Love, produced by Q-Tip. I had a phase where I was like really, really into this song. I was trying to make a blend, particularly with the second verse. Sometimes I sit back with a Buddha sack, mine's in another world, thinking how could we exist through the facts. And so I was listening to the acapella on the 12-inch a ton, and you can hear Nas turn the pages.
No way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like gives me chills thinking about it. Yeah, it's like, and like there, you can tell, like, I think we talked about this when we talked to Razzcast. Some guys like kind of took the Jay-Z thing and like, I don't write my rhymes. Everything's off the head. Yeah. I keep my figures in my head. Yeah. Kind of like that whole like genre of rap. And I don't know if Nas ended up there. It's kind of like a professional MC's.
It is.
Kind of like style. But he was very much. These rhymes are very written.
Totally.
Yeah, and
totally.
It's I don't know. If you have that record, pull it out and put the headphones on and turn it up. And you can hear him turning the pages. It's super dope
that's
to me. Like
dope.
Puts you in the room with it.
That's really cool.
So that's my story about One Love.
It's a weird badge of honor to be like, I don't write shit down. I guess it's cool to improvise, but write a good fucking song.
If the songs are good, then that's great.
That's what matters.
The flip side of that coin is some cats will sound like they're reading it. There's a couple of
when we're I listened to that NPR with Rakim, and he's like, yeah, the Bobito and Stretch one, where he's like, yeah, you know, some of that shit I was just straight reading it, and he wished he could go back and redo it.
Yeah, well, Molly Marl is famous for saying he thought Rakim was terrible. Like, he's like, this dude's voice gives me a headache. Like, the way he's reciting, I'm like,
Marley
really?
Marl, as history has sort of unpacked, I mean, kind of sounds like a fucking jerk.
Right?
Am I right?
Wait, so Marley Marl,
from every story,
he doesn't show up on Illmatic
Jack's
at all.
Beats? No,
interesting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Right. Which is like the matriarch, or patriarch, excuse me. He was a bad mother. The patriarch of his neighborhood.
Non-binary.
Yeah. There's layers here, folks. There's layers. All right, One Love. Also, E-40 did kind of a shameless rip on this song, which East Coasters really took that to heart. I think that's why Rasheed Wallace dissed him in the...
Are the songs even the same? It just has the same title.
No. He's talking to a friend in jail. It's a whole concept. And the video is very similar. It was the thing. It was the thing. And so
I missed that.
That's why... I feel like Rasheed Wallace, who famously dissed E-40 in 4080 Magazine, I think that's where a lot of that animus comes from, is that somehow
interesting.
We were just over here which it was a pretty clean ripoff, but E-40 is a
I never put that together. I've listened to both of these songs hundreds of times, and I never even thought it being the same.
Nope.
Yeah,
that's why you listen to this podcast. You don't listen to it, but you want it. That's why you on this podcast.
Sadly, I do listen to it.
Do you?
Oh yeah,
I'm funny. Eh?
I listen to every episode. We're all funny.
Well, you kind of you produce it. You have to listen to every episode. You're kind of locked in. Have fun with the last one. But
try not to drown.
Inside jokes. All right, One Love.
All right, and then. One Time for Your Mind.
Yeah, so I have heard, I am aware of the school of thought that says that this shouldn't have made the album, but I feel like it's so fun. It's like, it's kind of a release after you get these really dark, moody tracks, and it just feels like you're on the corner with him, and motherfuckers are just kicking freestyles back and forth.
Yeah,
you know
I
mean?
Love that.
And Large Pro kind of ties it all together. You know, mm-hmm. Large Pro really, honestly, is an underrated voice in rap. He has an amazing voice for rap. I know he's like
more I know you mean
a producer primarily, right, but
right. Looking a full on career as an MC he's for a sure. Very good yeah. MC
and for a producer first MC. We might have talked about this on our producer rapper episode. He has literally two. Let's say if I make this fake list that I'm just making right now, top 50 verses. You could argue Looking Out the Front Door. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
first verse is up on my... one of the best verses ever written.
Totally.
And so his voice on this track, Nas, just after totally taking you through this intense, dark street narrative. Now this is kind of more back to just fun, mm-hmm. you know, party mm-hmm. style of hip hop. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a great kind of addition.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a good juxtaposition. I mean, the whole album is so scenic anyways. And right. So this, yeah, like you were saying, this is them kicking freestyles and chilling.
Yeah, it's a fun scene. Yeah, amidst it all.
The next track is Represent.
Represent.
Primo. This is classic Primo. This is the only song where I used to be like, alright, that's a little East Coast for me.
Really?
Yeah, I used to be. I
love songs where it sounds like everyone's in the same room yelling. Totally. I love that shit, dude. That's such a thing that will never come back to hip hop. Like,
right.
No one has enough people around at the time. You can't like email everyone. Like, can you yell "represent" 16 times and then email me that?
Just CC
and then you put
everyone?
Them all together.
It's a long CC list.
So scenario is the number one thing that always comes to mind. But like, I love that.
We called that rah-rah back in the day.
Interesting.
Yeah. We called that, that's rah-rah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So leaders of the new school kind of pioneered that.
I thought that was like a Black Moon sort of thing.
They did that
too. For sure.
Yeah.
You can tell it's like several less dudes though.
Totally.
Like Black Moon had those guys and they all yelled on the
several
on
more
beat.
Blunts and less dudes. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So there's.
I just feel like this song is super hard. Like we were talking in the Gangstar episode where we had little snippets from Primo. You guys should go back and listen to that if you haven't yet.
Flex.
It's just like. He had decided to switch up his style around this time.
Yep.
And this is some non-jazz Primo.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's an early kind of cue of where that was headed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it definitely hits and could have been on Hard to Earn, right? Like it has that feel. That's a great point.
Right.
That's a great point.
And then the album is over, but not before we get some Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to have it. Got to have it.
Oh, perfect.
The Human Nature flip on It Ain't Hard to Tell is like, it's iconic.
Yeah. When it bleeds through, you're like, excuse me?
Totally.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And I wasn't even a kid checking for samples. I mean, I was a fucking kid.
Yeah.
But it was like, what? Did I hear this before? You
know, like, you're really reminiscent of a very popular song.
Dave's like, why?
I just imagine a young Dave saying that. Yeah. I'm holding that imagery.
Kicking in an ESL class.
Yeah. It Ain't Hard to Tell is like one of those, you know, tattoo that shit on my chest type lyrics. You know what I mean? It's again,
because you excel and prevail.
I attract clientele. It's one of those things where there's a certain thing in rapping as a bounce. So Method Man always has great bounce,
right?
Yeah,
Redman as well. Just the lyrics bounce, and I think It Ain't Hard to Tell is another one of those songs where. You know, rap at its essence is talking fly shit over a beat.
Right.
And so the what Paulo might say if he was here, shout out to Imaginary Paulo, is there's definitely something percussive about the way that he gets into his lyrics on this one. And so the shit just ages so well.
Right.
I listen to a lot. I do. I go back and I listen to shit and I'm just like. All right, had to be there.
Totally.
You know, games moved on. I totally respect all pioneers. No, like,
it's like taking
an old
bottle of whiskey off the, you know, off the shelf. It's just, it's just so perfect.
And you taste it, you're
ageless.
Like, oh yeah. It still hits. And
ain't
so,
hard to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of a liquor endorsement. So, yeah, Nas went on to be kind of this really interesting figure because we talked about was he haunted by Illmatic. And I think in his latter years, he found a way to capitalize off of it. Time is Illmatic was huge. He did the Rock the Bells tour mm-hmm. with it, where he did yep. that album. After a certain point, he stopped trying to get away from it.
Right. And he embraced it.
Right.
And then
right.
we have a Hennessy ad where we hear New York State of Mind. Mm-hmm. It's for a certain guy of totally, a certain age. Totally. It's pure aesthetic. It's like the George Clooneyfication of Nas. and he's embraced
yeah.
that thing. And then, you know, he's a horrible picker of beats. We know this.
Right.
But I think in his latter years, he gradually kind of started working back to that original formula. Even that horrible album with Kanye, still, sorry, Dave. still, you can feel them still trying to be like, how do we make the Illmatic moment happen again in a new context?
He'll never be that person again, right, though. Never be young again. He'll never have like not done this before again.
Right.
And he'll never like be looking at life that way. Like mm-hmm. what Illmatic has is this really interesting view on life, where I think it's encapsulated in the little vignette that they weirdly try to shoehorn into the movie Belly, where he's like sending the shorty to the
end of the block
the store for Phillies. Yeah. And they make it's such a weird scene, because I think in the song he's saying he left him some jewels that he could sell if he chose.
Gross, yeah.
Mentally.
Yeah.
But in the movie, he's like taking his necklace off and giving it to this little kid. And I'm just like, it's so like ham-fisted.
Totally.
Anyway, I just wanted to sneak in my little diss of.
You think Hype Williams isn't a world-class auteur? Oh, my goodness.
He has a way with visuals. The beginning of that movie is amazing. Anyway.
No, but Nas was such a young wise man on this album.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So you want to hear that wisdom in his later shit. As an adult,
it's like he's not a wise old man.
Totally,
he's a wise young man.
Exactly.
And I think I'm going to be completely honest here. In that Mass Appeal documentary series that we talked about on a previous episode, mm-hmm. where he it's basically
him and Dave East. Yeah,
Nas looks bad. he looks like he got his Hennessy payment in product.
Right, totally.
Remember when he's driving around New Orleans in like the back of that SUV, and he's like, "Oh, this would be sick. I'll just get a house with a porch and we'll like sit back and drink mint juleps or whatever because they're in New Orleans." And I'm like, dude, you could do that literally anytime. You're talking about Airbnb.
Totally.
And, like, you don't have to be Nas, the famous, like, brilliant rapper. You could just be some guy and get a pad with your homies in New Orleans and party. Like, he seems like he's a partier, and like,
you can smoke Cubans anywhere.
We know some weird stuff about his personal life because he's a famous person. It hasn't like all gone his way,
right?
But I just think there's such an interesting perspective of it's he's hood adjacent, living in the projects.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a participant in these stories necessarily,
as Jay-Z pointed out to us, rather
which is a whole deal, right?
Yeah,
but and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Is if you're this brilliant of a writer and rapper, then you like I'll take what you can give me. But I just think he'll never be that person again,
and that's why he can
never do another Illmatic.
Yeah, nor
it's not,
will
it's not
any
possible.
Any young person, right? Like Jay-Z will never, you know, capture the energy of his first one. And I guess what Nas kind of
But Jay-Z doesn't try to.
No. He reinvents.
That's
he
what
reinvents.
I'm saying.
And yeah, and so Nas,
like, he's an old sage now.
Jay-Z is not haunted by The Blueprint. He's not haunted by Reasonable Doubt.
Totally.
He's just Jay-Z.
Because he'll dump it and just do something totally different.
On the next.
And he doesn't care if you hate it either.
Right, totally.
But no one has hated it yet, except for Kingdom Come, weirdly, which is not as bad as people make
as bad as people say.
Kingdom Come? Oh, I thought our one of our fave listeners, Sun Ra, said it was the one with him and Timberlake. Which one was that? Holy Grail.
Magna Carta Holy Grail.
Which it has moments for me.
There's
but
a couple cuts.
I could see why somebody would say that,
though. That's a bad album.
No, dude, how about his album with fucking R. Kelly?
Yeah.
That's got to go.
He's super embarrassed
that. I know.
But that was quick.
Apparently, he says now he didn't want to do it at the time.
Yeah, he jettisoned that
easy
really
to say now.
Yeah. So how pissed would Nas be to see the Illmatic episode end with us talking about Jay-Z? that's kind of fucked up. But Jay-Z really kind of, and unfortunately, really encapsulated how Nas's career arc was going by jabbing him with the one hot album every 10-year average kind of in such a way that was kind of pre-Twitter. It was like an expert troll pre-Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I think has also colored how people think about Nas. Although, I will say this. There's a lot of people that love Nas because they see him as the antithesis of, sure. of Jay-Z, which I always thought was funny.
Right.
Because I'm like, no, Nas has cheesy club hits too.
They have way more in common than they are different.
Agreed.
In terms of like their product as rappers. I don't know them as people, but
yeah.
I think ether is also like become a term in society murdering someone's feelings. So he didn't lose that battle necessarily.
Not that one.
I like the takeover, but I think Ether is the better diss rap song.
Agreed.
Oh, absolutely. And it reinvigorated his career because then people really started writing for Nas again and wanting to root for him. Total 10-8 round Nas on that one, for sure.
He's just he came out at the right time where he got rich.
Yeah.
So it just to return to my point briefly is why he can never write another Illmatic. It's not a rich person's perspective.
Right.
It's the young wise person's like the project resident. And I might be like putting, you know, rose colored lenses on this because I like returning to that time as a listener with him so much. But like a rich person wouldn't
write that
care enough
I know
to write that detailed about what they were seeing.
Rich
people ride by in the back of cars. They don't sit on the bench and take notes on the experience.
He's not there
that's
anymore.
Happening.
Agreed. I want
to see those sharp observations carried over to adulthood, though.
Right. What do you mean? Who started Fox News? Did you know before Nas dropped that on you? It was Santa Claus. Did you know about anti-vaxxing? Jeez.
Oh, man.
I wanted to point out I did not bring that up.
Good.
I've grown.
So, you know, it's been an interesting career arc for Nas. But I guess what I keep going back to with a lot of hip hop is saying we just have to appreciate these records. Like, even if he never did another solid anything, how many people have 10 records that don't even come close to this one?
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally. Almost all of them.
I think it transcends hip hop. I mean, if you pick genres and are like, what are these? And you take the best and have them battle in brackets. I mean, this is probably rap's, you know,
you
first
could say
draft pick,
this,
right?
Yeah. You could say that this is.
If you're looking for a concise album that explains everything that's good about the genre, you could do no better.
Totally.
Yeah.
To the cover art, right? Down to every detail.
Every aspect.
Every stitch.
So I'm a dreamer. And they say I'm not the only one. But will we ever see, obviously we're not saying from Nas. But
your parents weren't born in America?
Yeah. Hey, don't have ice on me either. We don't need that. So will we ever see something like that again?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I believe in hip hop. I don't think it's dead. I think that people are making great art right now.
Right.
Another great 10-track album could be around the corner now. Would it get the push?
Well, that's
would
what
it
I
be
mean.
Understood as like a, ever be anything that's not dissected and debated to
That's
death?
What I mean. There's certain things, right? Like, there'll never be another Beatles in part because of when they came along.
Right.
They were an amazing group that came along at a particular dawn of the selling of recorded music, right? Not the dawn, but kind of the heyday. And so I get scared because I'm like, yeah, if whoever, Lil Nas X, Big Nas Y, whoever drops a 10-song classic album tomorrow, aren't we going to be done with that in like 2 weeks? Don't we just consume these things so much faster now?
Maybe. We're in it now, so we're not really able to tell. I'll say this. If I had to pick one person who could make the perfect 10-song East Coast rap album right now, Benny.
Wow.
I could see Benny making an album
that.
this good.
I thought he was
on fire right now, dude. Tana Talk 3
totally.
Was
so good.
Getting there. It was really close. It just needed to be edited a little bit. But he's got the like street thing, the lyrics, the presentation. He's authentic.
Totally. Definitely wisdom.
I don't know who it would be. I guess it would be Alchemist, Derringer. All the hot people right now, Muggs.
Right.
Like if he got an all-star lineup of like 3 or 4 producers and just like went for concision and just classic lyricism, he could make an album
totally,
that would be this moment's version of that.
Yeah, agreed.
Interesting.
Agreed.
Interesting.
All right. I'll executive produce it. Nate's bring out a there. Bag of money to San Jose.
Or even a small Ziploc bag.
No one makes any money off music.
That is so interesting.
Alchemist
okay.
mugs.
Who did you guys lock. Think I was going to say?
I thought you were leaning towards, you were going to say something about Kendrick.
Edon! Kendrick has his he went maximalist for his great album, right?
Right.
He went crazy jazz odyssey right. opera with To Pimp a Butterfly. Right. And damn, even though it won the Pulitzer Prize and is a very good record, is not Illmatic, right? That's
right,
his
right.
concise
agreed.
His concise
agreed.
Record.
Agreed.
Yeah, even Good Kid Mad City has too much like narrative mm-hmm. stuff in between, mm-hmm. too many mm-hmm. skits, too agreed. Much you know, it's all over the place. If you just want like concision. That's what I think it comes down
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and I feel like, because it's hard to say what's going to happen in the future, but I feel like whatever that next Illmatic thing will be, it'll have to hit us from left field. It'll have to be something
right,
that
right.
we've, an approach that we quite haven't heard yet, that we quite, there's have to be
it
kind of
reminds me when I first heard Earl's Doris. I was like, who the fuck is this kid?
Yeah.
There has
you
to
know
be that
what I mean?
Element.
Like, sort mm-hmm. of like, mm-hmm. you're used to it, but it's totally different.
All right, now that I've thought about this a little bit, the closest thing to Illmatic for our current moment, and it's actually been a while now, is Marsburg.
Mm, oh, for us. Given his rise. Okay.
It's like, it sounded different than what was out at the time, but it also like related to things and it was concise and it like has stood the test of time. It started a whole new wave.
Totally, totally. But the Marsburg sound wasn't like fully developed until later, you know.
Yeah, and I mean
that was still more
boom-bap. He definitely opened up an entirely new lane. I would even say for like the preponderance of lo-fi as we know it, like that whole aesthetic. But now we're not claiming that doom of our present time has the closest kind of. I mean, he has a
are
lot.
Are you
of
saying
projects.
Mad Villainy?
Yeah,
that's the only
concise
Doom record.
No, I mean, Operation Doomsday for me is like a real.
There's a lot of skits and a lot of filler. And
you hate skits.
I'm not
you're
the
anti-skit.
Biggest skit fan in the world, but
you're
the,
skittish.
One of the I'm just trying to like prove my thesis that the reason this album is so perfect and so good is because there's
it's
no fat,
no filler,
and
right.
skits are fat by their very nature.
Okay, right.
It,
right
skit,
okay.
Skits
right.
are skippable.
Right, right. Even the best skit, the best
right.
De La skit, I'm going to skip now.
Right.
You know, oh, to get to the song.
The De La skits weren't good. Ice Cube skits still hold up. Ice Cube skits are cinematic.
You
I
somehow
mean.
Managed to agree with me and say two things I completely disagree with in the same sentence.
Bang, bang.
The De La skits,
has good skits, dude. Yeah,
they're
what,
hilarious.
You don't think any of the skits are good?
They're hilarious.
De La?
Crocker.
De La Soul is dead. I feel haunted by those skits. I know them by heart. I know all the ones
right.
on 3 Feet High
call
by
people
heart.
A cocksnot.
Listen, cocksnot. Like, JD's Gafflin on America's Most Wanted. Just yeah. There's if you go back and listen to America's Most Wanted or Death Certificate.
Yeah.
Cinematic.
Yeah,
like,
no, they are cinematic. Yeah. I'm a bigger Lethal Injection fan than most people, and I have memorized the skits on that where he's like, they go and they talk to the old man who's like sitting on the bus. Are you guys there with me?
I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't mind if I take these car keys and, you know, the whole thing.
So
Ice Cube skits are good. That doesn't mean all skits are good or bad, and I definitely don't think that De La skits are completely terrible.
We're talking about the king of skits,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
I mean, no, by volume. And they're the volume shooter of skits.
They
are
okay.
Okay. Alvin, sure. The Allen Iverson, if you will, of skit creation. I love De La Soul. Do not come for me. Speaking of which, I heard a joint off of their last record, The Anonymous Nobody, at Mod Pizza today. I was like eating my overpriced pizza with
that's
a
weird.
Caesar, and I was like, "This is De La Soul."
Wow. Was it the David Byrne song?
No,
which, I've heard that in public
which,
before.
Which would make more sense? It's the one, Pain.
Okay.
Yeah, which it wasn't out of place. Like, they had just played some Lord or some weird shit, and then De La came on. I was like,
Well, now it's just like some Pandora fucking algorithm, right?
Yeah, totally.
I have to give a shout out to the hotel that I stayed at in Paris. It's called the Hotel Grand Boulevard, and they were playing Bahamadia when I checked in.
Damn.
And I was
you
like,
were coming.
Is this really happening? Like, I was looking around. Lucia handles all the travel arrangement stuff. So usually while she's checking in, I just wander around, and I was like, damn, dude, this is crazy. And then they were playing Tommy Boy or Tom Tom Club, not Genius of Love, mm-hmm. Wordy Rapping Hood, when we went out into to go have our
problematic
evening. And then when we were checking out, they were playing Mass Appeal.
What?
I know. They had the best hotel music I've ever heard, wow. and it was not even close.
Wow.
Like, you
crazy.
Could go to a W or something, and they'll play, like, you know, hotel lobby music, like
Thievery
Corporation
or
something like that.
Yeah, I was not impressed, but it occurred to me in the stay of one of these hotels I was in that, like, there's a genre of hotel music, and Yesterday's New Quintet is
in
right
it.
In it. Yeah, I didn't understand that.
I think of Licky Lee and kind of indie one hit wonders as like hotel music these days. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. If you guys know that cult song, Go Outside? Do you guys know that song? You'd know it if you heard it.
If you heard it.
It's in a hotel. Commercials and stuff. You would hear it in a hotel lounge. You'd feel cool.
The first hotel to play New York State of Mind when I come in, I'm leaving immediately because that shit's grimy. But that is the challenge to you hoteliers, to put more hip-hop in American hotels. We're tired of this shit.
Or hire us to make your playlist.
Yes.
Off top. Curated by Dad Bod Rap Pod.
Exactly.
We'll do it for room cards. This is the Dad Bod Rap Pod.
All right, next up we have an interview with Faith Newman, the A&R who signed Nas to Columbia Records and was an integral part of shaping the recording of Illmatic and, as you'll hear, kind of putting up with a young recalcitrant Nas as he was crafting his masterpiece.
Okay, well, you know, just to start off, I mean, you know, you being one of the main sort of architects behind the project, how does 25 years feel?
Unbelievable. I mean, seriously, it's like it's gone by in a flash. And I mean, it feels like yesterday that we just had the 20th with the, you know, with documentary and all that surrounded it. It's hard to believe that that's been 5 years. So.
Right.
25 years feels like it went by in a flash.
This is probably a story you've told before, but can you, you know, sort of retell about the first time you laid eyes on Nas and just the first time you guys met?
Oh, the first time we met?
Yeah.
Well, that was after I wanted to sign him. Mm. And he came to my office we were in the CBS building then, and he came to my office, and I think he was with Jungle and one other person. And he kind of, you know, he had this big, like, bow goose down coat on and a hat, you know, pulled down, like, over his eyes, you know. And he was kind of just sitting there, and I was trying to engage him, you know. And I don't even know how he got on the subject of Wild Style, but we started talking about Wild Style. And he said, so you're like the lady in Wild Style, meaning the white lady, Patty Astor. And I'm like, not exactly, but you know, and that was kind of how we broke the ice, and he laughed and I laughed, and then on we were cool.
Okay.
So leading up to, you know, you did sign him and it comes time to craft this album. Like, what was your what was your goal? What did you set out to do with this project?
I just said I knew that he was a genius, a young genius. Hmm. I knew that he had something to say. I knew that he was a storyteller. I thought that he was a poet. And I got all of this off of just him being on Live at the Barbecue, you know?
Yeah.
And I felt like he had, you know, coming from Queensbridge and all of these things. Like, he had this voice and he had this story that he needed to tell and that the world needed to hear. And I truly believe that. And to do that, you know, to make the best possible album, you get the best possible producers, which was different at the time, because, you know, prior to that, pretty much every hip hop album had one producer. Mm-hmm. And this had, you know, the cream of the crop of all New York producers on it, all wanting to work with him, you know, which was amazing. And they all delivered, that's for sure.
What was the process of sort of corralling all these producers together? Was that hard to orchestrate and put together?
No, it wasn't hard at all, to tell you the truth. I mean, because everybody was engaged and everybody was down to do it and everybody was excited about him and working with him. So that went pretty smooth. You know, the problems really, and the reason it took 2 years to make the album was more for Nas to have his process. Well, first of all, to grieve his friend who was murdered in between all of this, and, you know, to go through that, and also, you know, like being a teenager, I mean, and, you know, and having this kind of pressure, and, you know, we would book sessions and he would just not show up a lot.
Wow.
You know, and it's almost like, you know, looking back on it, it had to take the time that it took. Even if it meant that I was getting a lot of pressure from the record label to hurry up and finish. Mm. 2 years was a really long time. even at the state of the industry then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it was a process that had to take its own time, and it did. And also, you know, he had a feel that he had, you know, the beats. He was very particular in the beats that he picked.
Mm.
You know, like Premier would like suggest something, you know, like give him a beat and that he thought was dope, and Nas would be like, nah, you know. and then he'd like find one, and he'd like, you know, like he found that New York State of Mind piano sample, and that was it, you know. That was like that was a beautiful thing.
Mm. You know, of the producers, what was your relationship with Large Professor like? Because I know he sort of spearheaded a lot of that.
Oh, he absolutely did. And he was my first contact with Nas. Mm. He was the first person I went to.
Oh, wow.
You know, I'm like, tell me about this kid, Nasty Nas. Like, what's the story? What's the deal? You know? So Paul, Large Professor, who I call Paulie, was my first point of contact to Nas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've heard you sort of compare Nas to Rakim before. Mm-hmm. You know, in what ways did he strike you as, you know, like a sort of a second coming?
Because Rakim changed the game, because he was a storyteller, and it wasn't like bragging rap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and what it had been prior, like there was a before Rakim and an after Rakim. You know, with his kind of wordplay and his verbal skills and his storytelling ability and his ability to paint this very vivid picture, was something that I found in Nas as well. You know, especially for Nas being as young as he was, to have that kind of perspective, that kind of storytelling ability, that kind of, you know, ability to paint such a vivid picture of the life as he knew it. You know, so I definitely do think that they share a lot of similarities.
In your opinion, what do you think the kind of instant acclaim for Illmatic and its kind of being cemented as this instant hip hop classic meant for the rest of Nas's career?
I think maybe it could be, there's a downside to it, because it's kind of like everything you do after that point is going to be judged on Illmatic and the influence that it had, and the, you know, and the you know, the kind of the work of art that it was. You know, I think it could be difficult to, you know, feel like you have to follow that up. And also at the same time feel like you've grown up and you've grown past it and you've moved on to other things and have other things to talk about and other experiences to talk about. So that's kind of the conundrum. I know, and I could be speaking out of turn for Nas, but I know for a while, as far as I heard, he didn't really want to talk about Illmatic. You know, he went through a phase where it was like, I'm not talking about Illmatic. I'm going to talk about whatever it is I'm working on now. And I think right around the 20th, you know, when they started working on the documentary around the 20th, is when he really saw that what he was responsible for and what it meant to people. And I think he embraced it again. Again, I could be speaking for him and not, but I don't know, but it's just, that's kind of the sense that I got.
Sure. We really appreciate your perspective. Was it always going to be called Illmatic, and what does Illmatic mean to him and mean to you, and why is it called Illmatic?
It's called Illmatic, well, because it's ill. And it's automatic. It's automatically ill. I think he always had that name in mind for the album, always. It was like, you know, just, what can I say? It's like, without knowing how it was going to turn out, he always knew, I think, that it was going to turn out in this kind of, in, you know, what I would call seriously a perfect album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I got to say, I mean, you know, a short album, but a perfect album.
Was there any particular sessions or, you know, recording moments that stick out to you during the making of the album?
Well, there was, I'd say actually there's a story that one session that he had scheduled at D&D. And I was there and he didn't show up that night. So, you know, I'm always thinking, you know, shit, you know, we got to pay for this session and he's not here. And I got to, you know, hear more shit from the label about all the money that we're spending and all the money we're wasting. And anyway, I was like feeling particularly like pissed off that night, just about a lot of stuff. And he had left his one of his books, his rhyme books, you know, in the studio from, I guess, the night before or whatever. And I started reading it. And I just was like, had this moment of clarity where I was like, I don't care how long it takes to finish this album.
Wow.
This guy's a fucking genius, man. Like, you know, I didn't even, that was really like a moment where I kind of like exhaled and just said, stop worrying and just trust that it was gonna happen the way it needed to happen, even if we were spending a lot of money on, you know, studio sessions that never happened.
Sure. The great story. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. How did the album sell? I think we think a lot about its critical reception, but I actually don't have a sense of like how did it come out the gate and like how did it do for the company?
It didn't do very well, in terms of expectations. I think we did only about 86,000 the first week, and the reason was because the album had been so bootlegged. So that pretty much everywhere, and I'm not talking about in the US, I'm talking about over in the UK, I'm talking about everywhere, people had the album.
Interesting. And it's one of the few albums from its time that doesn't have an anti-bootlegging track on it.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
You know, how do you think?
Exactly.
How do you think it did?
So I think that really cut into our first week sales, no doubt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of how that happened? Was it some engineer somewhere, or
did
you ever follow up?
I think it was an engineer originally, and then DJ SNS had a copy. I know that he made a bunch of copies for people. Somehow it got out of the studio and into the hands of some DJs and stuff, and it just like kind of metastasized from there. You know.
Do you have a favorite track or something that defines the record for you?
They're all so good. It's so hard. I like each one for different reasons. You know, I would actually say Memory Lane, because he's a teenager and he's already reminiscing on his past, you know, and then he creates this picture of his childhood and woven in with the present time that I just think is genius. And I just think it's really poignant and special that he was just that, like I said, that a teenager is being, you know, is reminiscing on their childhood like that. I mean, it was so mature for him. So yeah, that would be, I choose that as my favorite.
You know, just to give people a little bit of perspective, I mean, you mentioned having a lot of pressure on you to get the project done and stuff. When, you know, where were you in your career at that point? And just to, you know, let people know kind of what you were up against.
Well, I had been at Def Jam Records for 5 years, four and a half years before I came to Columbia in 91. I signed Nas 2 weeks into my stint at Columbia.
Wow.
So I was what was my title? Senior director of A&R at Columbia Records at the time.
Wow. Also, so, you know, after all these years, you know, when you look back, what's like the one thing that sort of is there one thing that sort of sticks out to you about that era when you guys were putting
this was an amazing era in to begin with. It was, you know, New York was the center of the universe. I mean, and you were coming off of, you know, the West Coast invasion in the early 90s, and then you slip into, you know, Nas and Biggie and Wu-Tang Clan and Pete Rock and CL Smooth and Black Moon, and, you know, I'm forgetting a million other people, I'm sure, but the groups that kind of defined that moment in time that was so special about New York. And you know, it's too bad I don't think we'll ever get back there again, unfortunately. I mean, I don't see it coming, but, you know, who knows, maybe something will change
for sure. We just want to thank you for your time again. And do you have anything you want to plug or any shout outs that you want to do?
Let's see. Well, you know, I just finished this album that just came out. I don't know if you follow me on social media or not, but
we will.
It's this album, actually, that was like recorded 50 years ago by this group called the Nat Turner Rebellion.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I can send you the information on it. And basically what had happened was we bought the masters to this record company called Philly Groove Records. And Nat Turner Rebellion was one. The Delphonics were in there, a bunch of other groups, but Nat Turner Rebellion was in the group and had never put an album out. And so 50 years later, I got to finally put the record out. It's an amazing album.
What's the sound? Is it like jazz or like soul?
No, it's soul.
Wow.
It's funk and soul.
Wow,
and
that sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's really incredible. There's only one living member of the group, and he's been really into like doing interviews, and we had a piece in Rolling Stone, in New York Times, and Philadelphia Inquirer. So it's a pretty cool project. So I'm pretty excited about
that.
Wow,
we are definitely looking forward to that. Thank you again.
I'm gunning for a Grammy. That's my thing.
There you go.
Well, yeah. Faith, you know, we just want to thank you again so much for, you know, helping us celebrate the 25th anniversary, and especially, you know, like, tomorrow is the day. So, you know, thank you again so
much. Tomorrow is the day.
Timing couldn't have been more perfect. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey everybody, thanks again for tuning in this week and every week. We really appreciate you all. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram. That's mainly where we're active these days. And I have a special announcement. We are actually all performing at the same event. It's called Bring the Noise, and it's going to be at Back Bar in downtown San Jose on April 27th. So If you're in the Bay Area and you want to come out and meet us, Damone will be hosting the event. It's a hip-hop party. It's through the record label that Dave and Nate, Dave and I, are co-owners of. So we have past guest Kutso DJing and future guest Plattern. They're going to be performing with some MCs that they work with, and then a bunch of great DJs. MCs from out of town, Longshot from Chicago, cats from Minneapolis. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I know I'm going to try to use my DJ set just to play Hiding Places, probably side one, and then call it a night and just probably get a couple of JMOs and keep back at the bar. So if you want to meet Nate, Dave, Damone, and support the Dad Bod Squad, come on out to the show. We would look forward to meeting you all. And yeah, we'll be doing more stuff like this, but should be a fun night. Hope to see you there. Check the Twitter for details. Peace.